Hello, Katie. This is John Oates.
Oh, I recognize that voice. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm delighted to be talking to you. I feel like I've lived with you for the past week reading your book.
Well, what do you think? Are you still surviving?
I am surviving, and I'm so excited to read the next part. So that's a good thing.
Good.
I was an English major in college, and the way this is written, it just brings all this imagery. Really, I can picture everything.
That's a good critique.
Oh, it's a great critique. I just have enjoyed reading this so much. So congratulations.
Well, good. Thanks.
First of all, how did you hook up with Chris Epting, the guy that helped you do this?
Well, Chris was actually the catalyst for the book itself. He and I had been doing a series of interviews over the years. And every time I would speak to him, he just seemed to have this real sense of where I was coming from. And I began to share a lot of personal stories with him and eventually shared the fact that I had these handwritten journals that I kept from 1970 through beginning of 1980. And he was fascinated. He said, man, that must be amazing. He said, could I see, something? And so I made some copies of some of the journals and I sent them to him. And when he started reading through it, he said, this is a book. You've got to do it. I'd love to help you. And that's how the whole process started. He became my researcher. He became my cheerleader, my guide through the publishing process. Because, he's written a number of books himself. So, really great editor, just in general, was a great collaborator.
Well, it's wonderful. You guys have a great thing going there.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your discipline. You're just talking now about keeping journals. As I said, I was an English major, I wrote, but there is no way I would have kept journals like that, especially when you're thinking about your life during that time was crazy. How did you have the discipline or even the thought in your head that this may be something worth keeping someday and looking back at?
Well, the reason I started the journals was because I was about ready to graduate from college. I was about ready to go on this 4-month trip to Europe, which was a dream of mine. And I just thought to myself, I needed to document the trip to Europe. I knew that for a fact. But then I thought to myself, well, whatever I was going to do after college would probably set me on some sort of course for the rest of my life. Now, at the time, I knew Daryl, but we weren't working together. And we had never, even talked about working together. We had dabbled a little bit, and we hung out during the college years. And so my goal was to document wherever life was going to take me in that ensuing 10 years after graduation. As fate would have it, I got together with Daryl, we formed a partnership, and started embarking on this crazy career that's lasted until today. Here again, it was just fortuitous that I was able to have the foresight to say something's going to happen. Who knows? Who knows? I might have gone off and become a monk. God knows what would happen.
Yeah.
But, as it turned out, I became a rock star instead. So there you go.
Oh, man. But you could have done a lot of different things. That's the great thing about you. You're kind of a renaissance man with all the
yeah,
other
well, there's a lot of that too.
Interests that you had. I couldn't help but thinking about your family. You didn't talk a whole lot about them, but it's because you had so much to talk about. But obviously your sister and your parents had to have had a lot of support for you. Tell me a little bit about your folks.
My parents were very supportive of me, and they recognized that I had musical talent from a very early age. And if you obviously at the beginning of the book, you'll learn that. And my mom became a bit of a stage mother during that period of time. She always kind of pushing me to perform. And I think she got a lot of pleasure, personal satisfaction. I think she lived vicariously through me in a way. She wasn't musical, either was my father, but they always gave me guitar lessons, voice lessons, bought me equipment, helped me do whatever I needed to do. And the best thing was is that they never really tried to steer me in any other direction. There was never that conversation, well, what are you going to do when this music thing doesn't work out for you? That was never even mentioned. It was, kind of amazing, really, to think about that.
Isn't that something?
They just, whatever I wanted to do, they seemed supportive. And it's kind of been a philosophy that I've tried to carry on with my son as well.
Although your son sounds almost like the dad or something. Your son sounds amazing.
But the thing is, he has no musical interest whatsoever.
Yeah.
But I support him 100%. So I try to use the same, principles, with him, even though it's a completely different scenario.
Although he's going to be like, find the cure to cancer or something, the way he's going.
Well, I doubt that, but he might save the world, and that might help.
Interesting how he's turning out. Your sister, you were saying that she's won awards.
Yeah, she has won Emmys. She's been a television producer for about 30 years. She has worked for ABC. She's covered 3 or 4 Olympic Games. She's done reality TV. She's done Regis Philbin, Regis and Kathy Lee.
Wow.
She's been all over the map. She has a lot of entertainment news. She does news news. She does features. So, yeah, she still works for ABC as a freelancer.
And it all started with that video.
There you go.
That's something. Then let's talk about your discipline of having this partnership, the musical partnership with Daryl. How does that happen where you're with this person for years? You must know when to step away, but how do you do it together? That's really extraordinary, John.
Yeah, it is extraordinary. The more I think about it, the more unbelievable it seems. We have very different personalities, but we have a lot of things in common. We have the ability to leave each other alone when it comes to certain personal things. We don't impose our lifestyles outside of music or our strategies for life, and I think that's an important thing. We live in different parts of the country. We don't really interact that much other than on the musical side. And when we tour, we try to make it so that it's, at this point in our lives, tolerable and easy to do and enjoyable. And we don't overdo it so that we get tired of it.
I saw you not too many years ago at Chastain with Todd Rundgren, and what a pleasure. Mm-hmm. First of all, I love him. He's one of my favorite artists, and I loved reading the parts of the book where he produced your record. It's funny to think that the hits didn't come from that, but it was a real transition point after that for you guys. Mm-hmm. Tell me about Todd, your relationship with Todd, because obviously you're still good friends.
I was actually never that close to Todd. Daryl's a little bit more friendly with him now. In fact, I think Daryl just did a track on his new album. It wasn't anything. Todd and I just never really became friends. We worked together, cordial, and he's an incredibly talented guy. But, you know, here again, he's a very driven and very, he has his own world. You know,
yes.
It's Todd's world, and you just, you know, you can kind of orbit around it a little bit, but then the reality is it's really very distinct unto him. So, you know, he's a great guy. He's very obviously incredibly talented, but that's about it, really.
Well, just those beautiful melodies that you guys share, but that's interesting. Yeah. Okay, now, the part of the book where I fell out really three or four times was when you're in Colorado and after you've met Amy. And first of all, you're talking about the animals, and I think that Jackass story was one of the funniest things I've ever read in my life. Really amazing to me. You didn't dive after that.
I know. Well, that's my wife, you know. Well, she wasn't my wife. She's my girlfriend then, but that's her. She bought me a Jackass for my birthday, and I think she was trying to tell me something.
Oh, my God. And I love the fact that you guys don't get rid of it, right? It's just like it's...
Well, yeah, we just left him alone. Eventually, we moved him down the road to another ranch. Some friends down the road took him.
Let him live. And then Hawk the dog, that part of the story.
That's one of my favorite stories in the book.
That is just amazing. Well, it was so well done. And then you're sitting here thinking about this creature that obviously had been abused or something before he came to you. But it's really wondrous, reading about your life in Colorado. It sounds pretty magical.
I'm sitting here right now looking out the window.
That house that you built?
Yep.
The Hunter S. Thompson chapter, I about died. The story about this rocket ship or whatever in back of his house being built and how you're just kind of rolling along with it. That's what's great to me is that you know you're writing and people are reading this going, this is the strangest thing I've ever read, but that you just sort of went along with it because it's your neighbor. Can you tell us a little bit more about your relationship with that neighbor?
It was a good relationship because he slept during the day and worked at night, and I worked during the day and slept at night. So we really didn't have to cross paths too often. We had a lot in common. He loved birds, especially peacocks. And my wife, Amy, loves birds as well. And we had guinea fowl and peacocks and chickens and turkeys. So we had a lot in common. He used to love the birds, but he hated our dogs. So, he told us he would always comment on how much he loved our birds. But he said, if your dogs ever come over here, I'm going to shoot them.
I know.
So, so it was very, he very clearly defined parameters for our neighbor relationship. You know, he was a cool guy. If he liked you, he could be very nice and cordial. But he loved being Hunter Thompson. You know, he loved the image of the Gonzo journalist that was really kind of it was almost like a character in a way.
Yes.
And I think he reveled in it. You know, he really liked being that guy. And I think when he couldn't be that guy anymore, that's when he kind of checked out.
Oh, my gosh. The whole Johnny Depp story. I mean, it was hilarious and sad at the same time. It's just wonderful to read. It really is. Now I'm backing up a little bit. The relationship with Tommy Mottola, I would never be talking to the person again. I'm sure you probably haven't.
Well, I don't go out of my way. Let's put it that way.
No, my God.
Occasionally we'll, by accident, cross paths, but there's no real relationship there.
Has he said anything since your books?
You know, he didn't say anything. I gave him, a heads up. I said, I am going to talk about the things that happened. But, to be honest with you, I thought it was better for me to take the high road when it came to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because the end result of those negative things that, of course, were very negative at the time, the end result was caused a positive change in my whole life. And it ended up with me being a better person, moving to Colorado, getting married, having a kid, building a house, changing my life. So in a way, all those negative things, you know, if I look at it now in retrospect, it really became a positive thing. So, you know, there was no reason for me to be vindictive at this point, you know, in my life, because I lead a good life. And why should I go back in time and try to, you know, just say, hey, look, you know, I wrote what happened. I was honest. And to be honest with you, I took the blame for a lot of that stuff personally, because I should have been more aware. I should have been more savvy, and I should have been better educated in terms of the business side of things I was doing. But I was too busy playing pop star.
I really thought you did kind of hold your tongue with him. I thought you were very kind as you could be.
Well, the way I wrote the book, I assumed that anyone who really wanted to could read between the lines.
Yes.
And I wanted to leave it at that.
And I thought that was very classy, but it also was a great lesson. I mean, when I first read when you said something about your money, or you thought it was okay, or was it, I couldn't wait. It was a teaser to me to go, what happened? I want to know what happened, because I didn't know about it. And then how you came out of it and how you've lived the rest of your life. It's really a great lesson to everybody to read that story.
Well, you know, it's a bit of a cautionary tale, you know, and it's for anybody who cares.
The Philly connection is interesting with me. I just love to visit Philadelphia. I think it's one of the greatest cities ever. Do you still get back to the East Coast often?
Well, yeah, I was just there about 4 or 5 days ago. We have a festival. Daryl and I have our own rock festival in Philly, which was the first year. It's called Hoagie Nation.
So I wasn't far off.
It was last Saturday night, and next year, if it's successful, it will be a multiple-day festival. And we get back, and my father still lives in the suburbs, and I go visit him whenever I can. But I don't really have a lot of friends left after all these years in Philadelphia. They've all either moved on in one way or the other.
You guys, music-wise, are coming here June 11th, it's Sunday, right? At the Infinite Energy Center, Daryl Hall and John Oates. Tell me about what we're going to be seeing with the show, and Tears for Fears, being out on the road with those guys. I love their music.
Yeah, it's a great combination. I love the band. We were really thrilled when we found out Tears for Fears was available to tour and wanted to tour with us. I think it's a great combination. The reviews and the response to this tour has been tremendous. It's a big show. It's the biggest show we've done since the 80s in terms of over-the-topness.
Oh, wow.
You know, in terms of lights, and it's a big show. And, you know, we've been doing smaller shows over the years, and that was good, but this thing has just kind of grown, and the popularity of a younger generation has turned on to our music and has supported us and grown, really. So the growth has really put us back into the arenas, and that's what, for us, is a way of basically, it's almost like a return to the 80s, in a sense.
I love it. I just feel like your music it's timeless, certainly, but it's also just part of all of our lives, you know? It's part of what we grew up with. I can't wait to see you live. I wish you luck with this book. It's so great. Change of Seasons. I loved it. Read it cover to cover. Could not put it down. And I look forward to the second one. I can't wait to catch up more with you.
Yeah, exactly. When I got to 400 pages and I realized I hadn't even dealt with the last 17 years where I moved to Nashville and started an entire new solo career, I just thought, there's another book here somewhere, and I'll just have to get my butt in gear to do
it. Because I can't even imagine what it took to do this one, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm so glad you shared your life with us. It's such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for all your time.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that was a good interview, and I appreciate you enjoying the book, and maybe we'll see you in Atlanta.